Hello, and welcome to the fourth edition of Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm Cindy Sheehan. Wow, we've already been on the air for a month. I think we're making an impact here in the San Francisco radio market as a talk show host on the more conservative station KGO made a weird and unwarranted preemptive attack on me last night. She must somehow be feeling a little threatened by the truth. Well, I don't know. I won't say her name because she obviously wants a little publicity for her show off of my back, and I won't feed into that strange kind of rating psychosis. We will stick to the issues that are important to progressives here on the Soapbox. We are already receiving syndication feelers and are excited about spreading the Soapbox to other cities. Last week on the show, we bid a not-so-fond farewell to George and Dick. And boy, did we have a great time at our farewell celebration party. Our topic today is meet the new boss, same as the old boss. And we will be speaking with Larry Pinkney, an editor for the Black Commentator and former member of the Black Panther Party. And later we will be chatting in studio with former vice presidential candidate and San Francisco political dean, Matt Gonzalez. We will be speaking to Matt and Larry about their aspirations or about their apprehensions of an Obama administration. I can guarantee you all that on Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox, President Obama is neither getting a pass nor any kind of honeymoon. The problems of this world are too overwhelming for any kind of happy, crappy hope. We can't feed our children or pay our mortgages with hope. We need food and jobs, people, not the empty rhetoric of trying to prop up a failing empire. Stick around. We'll be right back.
The Cindy Sheehan Soapbox has a simple philosophy. We don't want our show owned, sponsored, or beholden to any corporate bastards. Don't get us wrong. Not all large companies and businesses are evil imperialists, but let's get real. Conscious companies are hard to come by. Sobered by the challenges facing independent media and inspired by the massive support for our No Corporate Bastards policy, we are launching our 1,000 Soapbox Sponsors campaign to sign up 1,000 monthly supporters by the end of January. We are asking you, the listeners, activists and grassroots organizers that make up our base, to donate $5, $10, or $20 a month to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox not only on the air, but also innovative and powerful. Donating $5 a month, the price of a trip to a coffee shop in most cities, will provide not only the peace of mind that Cindy's Soapbox will stick around for years to come, but will also make you a subscriber for as long as your monthly donation continues. Furthermore, we will print the list of monthly sustainers on our website, unless you don't want to be identified, as a thank you to all of our supporters. Go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com to sign up now with our automatic monthly donation option. We are committed to producing a high-quality radio show and website that works as a tool to keep you informed and promote social and economic justice. Become a monthly Soapbox sponsor and help make it happen. We are neither owned nor funded by big conglomerates or advertisers. That's why we need your support to sustain our efforts. Please donate now at cindysheehansoapbox.com and consider becoming a monthly sponsor to help us secure our financing into the future. Power to the people.
Hi, this is Scott Cuddy, owner of Digital Media Production. You know, after 30 years or so in the media business, I've learned to keep up on the latest programming as well as the latest equipment and trends in the business. And nowadays, business and show hosts alike are choosing the internet and podcasting as an effective means of getting their message out to a mass audience. Here at Digital Media Production Company, I'm prepared to help your company or you and your personal enterprise jump through all those technical as well as marketing hoops in order to realize your goals. Whether you want to produce an audio or video podcast spotlighting your business, big or small, or become the host of your own radio show, I can help you get there without breaking your budget. So give me a call today at 805-403-4265. I'll share some of my successes with you and let you know how you can be successful. Or email me at dmpc63@msn.com. Located in San Francisco and available worldwide on ISDN. That's Digital Media Production Company, 805-403-4265. Or send me an email today at dmpc63@msn.com.
Hey, welcome back to Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. We have on the phone with us, like I promised before the break, our brother Larry Pinkney, former Black Panther Party member and columnist and editor for the Black Commentator. Brother, welcome to my show. It's an honor to speak with you.
Oh, Cindy, right back at you. I'm so, so glad to be hearing your voice. You are an inspiration to us all.
Well, I always thank you for your integrity and for always, you know, courageously speaking truth to power. But we're talking about today, the theme of today's show is Meet the Old Boss, Same as a New Boss, Barack Obama. And you have been critical about Obama as a candidate, and now he is the President of the United States of America. And for sure, we all agree, I hope we agree, that it's about time that there was a person of color in that office. But it's not so much the person, it's the office and what that person has to do, what that person has to sell out to do, or make compromises to get there is what the problem is that we have. But you wrote that Obama is no community organizer. And I've spent time with former Black Panther Party members here in San Francisco. You know the San Francisco 8 and their case. And they talk about community organizing back in the day when the party was really active in mostly poor communities. Can you talk about why you said that Obama was no community organizer and about real courageous community organizing when the Black Panther Party was at its height?
Yeah, thank you so much, sister. Bottom line is that Obama couldn't organize his way out of a paper bag, even if you held the other end open for him. Because Obama comes out of an ilk, if you will, that serves the interests of the privileged class with money, corporate America, okay?
Right.
So to even refer to Obama as being an organizer is a misnomer, unless, of course, you mean he organized a badminton game in Harvard or something like that, or unless, of course, you're talking about him organizing some board of directors, corporate board of directors meeting. Organizing is about laying one's life on the line. Organizing is about building health programs, child care programs, programs to protect our senior citizens, programs that take care of the community, educational programs, and certainly, first and foremost, programs that are about the people, not that are about destroying the people, such as these militaristic programs that Barack Hussein Obama is all about. So we have to be honest with ourselves. As a black person, as a former Black Panther, and as a former Minister of Interior for the Republic of New Africa, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. The bottom line is that I understand that organizing means you lay your life on the line for the people, be they black, brown, white, red, blue, yellow, or an off shade of turquoise. You lay your line on the you lay your life on the line for the people. This is not Barack Obama. He is not the fulfillment of Dr. Martin Luther King's dream.
And I read about that last week.
That's right. I read that, and it was absolutely excellent, and you were right on it. You know, he is the antithesis of Brother Martin's dream. He stands in opposition to Brother Martin's dream, talking about, and I'm talking about Obama saying, oh, he just wants to fight the war better.
Right.
You don't fight a war better.
Exactly.
You don't have the war to begin with.
Exactly. And, you know, we know he's going to be increasing troops to Afghanistan, where that has been, Afghanistan has been the burial ground of many empires before. And I don't think it's a bad thing that the U.S. empire would die or go away. It just will collapse on us and not the party of the ruling class.
Right.
But you know, the Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas in Palestine has been successful because they have been those community organizers. Many people don't know that they do provide services that the people weren't getting from the governments, and that's why the Black Party, the Black Panther Party, had so much credibility in the communities back in those days, because they did provide services that weren't received from the government.
Correct. Absolutely, 100%, Sister Cindy, absolutely correct. The bottom line is Hamas, Hezbollah, any organization that serves the needs of the people, the everyday needs of the people, common sense would dictate that the people are going to respond to them. That's what the J. Edgar Hoover, the FBI, and the U.S. government said. You know, contrary to the popular myth put about by the corporate media, who loves Barack Obama, by the way,
right.
But contrary to the myth put about by them, the Black Panther Party was feared because of its health programs, its
exactly.
child care programs,
exactly.
its food programs, its medical programs.
Well, and it actually posed a threat to the status quo, and the only reason Barack Obama, in my opinion, is president is because he does not pose a threat to the status quo. And you wrote a brilliant piece back in February of 2008, almost a year ago, mm-hmm. called Barack Obama and the Euphoria of Madness. And you said those who ignore reality and the lessons of history do so at their own peril. Ignoring reality, whether in a state of euphoria or not, is nonetheless a sure recipe for disaster. What exactly did you mean by this?
Well, you know, we can talk about that a house, let's say you and I are and my lovely significant other,
mm-hmm.
we're sitting in the house, and the house is on fire. And so you say to me, "Brother Larry, the house is on fire." And I say, "Well, let's move to the right
a uh-huh.
little bit." And then, you know, and then my significant other says, "Baby, I can still feel the heat." And I say, "Well, let's move to the center." But the house is still burning. In other words, the recipe for disaster is ignoring the reality of who and what Barack Obama is, who he represents, and who his interests he serves. So for the majority, and I mean the majority, overwhelmingly, both in this country and throughout the world, for the majority of people, to be ignored is to ignore the needs, okay, of the majority of people, is to do so at great peril. And that's what I meant, that we cannot, no matter how we try, we can be as euphoric as we want to be. You know, black folks, white folks, brown folks, yellow folks, red folks, oh, we can be happy. Oh, we finally got a colored guy.
Right.
Well, you know what? Brother Martin talked about not color, but character.
Right.
And this is what we need to be emphasizing. And the character of Barack Obama and the cronies that he represents, such as Lockheed, such as Goldman Sachs, and the list goes on, they represent the bloodsuckers of the people, not only the people in the United States, and I say the people meaning the vast majority of everyday people, but also the people around this globe. We've got to touch base with reality and go from there.
Well, and this is Cindy Sheehan on Cindy Sheehan Soapbox, Green 960, and we're talking to Larry Pinkney from The Black Commentator. Before we go to the next question, Larry, would you like to give my listeners your website?
Sure, www.blackcommentator.com.
And in your piece about the euphoria of madness, and I'm sure that was based on, you know, the seemingly blindness that people have to Obama's faults, his votes, like you said, who he represents, who he stands for. Just because he is articulate, just because he can read a speech very well.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, and he does have a certain amount of charisma, but, you know, compared to George Bush, anybody actually seems to have more charisma and intelligence.
Well,
so
compared
we
to
didn't
George
need
Bush,
that
my
much.
Kitty cat has more charisma. But
exactly. But you also wrote something very, like, prescient last February. And last February was even before Obama was the the nominee, right? He was still in primary primaries with Senator Clinton, and he said that he's a stalwart supporter of apartheid. And I think now with what's happening with the genocide of Gazan Palestinians being committed by the Israeli-U.S. military cabal, and we saw our sister, Cynthia McKinney, was on a boat from Cyprus to Gaza, and the Israeli Navy rammed her three times, and they were shooting at the boat. And Cynthia McKinney got off that boat. I believe it finally docked or landed in Lebanon.
Right.
And she got off that boat, and she said, what is what? You know, she said that Israel has been occupying Palestine for decades. The Gazans are starving. They're in... behind this wall, this impenetrable wall, they're not getting supplies, they're not getting humanitarian aid or medicine. So Cynthia, my candidate, the person I supported and voted for,
you know,
was that community, that brave, courageous organizer you were talking about that put her own life on the line to help people she didn't even know. And what did Obama say about it? When he was the president-elect, he said that I can't say anything because there's only one president at a time. So what do you think about this stalwart supporter of apartheid?
I think it is utterly despicable. I think that it is time for people to wake up. And I say that he is a supporter of apartheid. He, meaning Barack Obama, is a supporter of apartheid because that is precisely what Zionism is. It is apartheid. It is akin to the former Manifest Destiny in the U.S., which basically said that red peoples here could be genocided, for after all, it was God's will,
right.
which is utterly ridiculous. But today we have and have had for decades now the Zionists running around here who actually, through AIPAC, that lobby.
And that, we have to remind my listeners, that's the American Israeli Political Affairs Committee.
Right. And we have to understand that AIPAC receives, okay, for every American dollar that you hold in your hand, AIPAC receives at least a tenth to a fifth of that dollar.
And that's is that for the military aid we give to Israel?
Yes.
Oh, so, and they lobby for that, for that aid in Congress, not only for military aid, but for many bills and resolutions that support this apartheid of Israel against the Palestinians, right?
That's right. That is correct. And you know, one of the things, you and I, Cindy, are young as we may be, are old enough to remember that... In the 60s and 70s, that who was the strongest ally of the apartheid government of South Africa? Why, it was Israel.
Right.
And nothing really has changed other than the fact that the United States, through subverting the will of the people, all over the globe. Other than that, nothing has really changed. And Israel, the Zionists in particular, continue to be stalwart in their apartheid activities, and Barack Obama is one of, if not the strongest supporter of apartheid Zionism. It is unacceptable, it is intolerable, and we as people, not just Americans, forget that for the minute, as human beings must stand up and say, no, we will not accept it under any pretense. No, we will not.
Well, Obama, when he was in Israel last July of 2008, he said that, you know, Israel has the right to defend itself without extending that same right to the Palestinians. And that seems to be the mantra of almost everybody in our government. There was a resolution passed in the House supporting Israel and what they're doing with the Palestinians. Only 5 House members voted against that resolution. Dennis
right.
Kucinich and Ron Paul, and I'm sorry I don't remember the other 3, but to me, that is, like you said, it's abominable. And if Israel has a right to defend itself, then certainly our brothers and sisters in Palestine, who have been damaged by this apartheid, have the same right. And instead of having rhetoric that's violent, or having rhetoric that is very hostile, and Barack Obama just made a hostile comment towards President Hugo Chavez, and Hugo, in characteristic style, said he has the same stench as George Bush.
And he does. So, Hugo was correct.
You know, so, and we know. And so we're going to have to wrap up this interview. It went by so fast, Larry, yeah. And brother. And hopefully we'll talk again, but keep up the truth. Keep speaking truth to power, and your integrity that says what's right is right. And we'll be working together to be that light that shines when these people are going to be inevitably disappointed.
That is correct. And sister, understand that we respect you and we love you very, very much. So stay strong. And as they say in Swahili, Lazima tushinde mbele shaka, we shall succeed without a doubt.
We shall. Thank you so much, Larry.
Take care, sis.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. This is Cindy Sheehan Soapbox on Green 960. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. When we come back, we'll be speaking to Matt Gonzalez.
Some anniversaries aren't cause for celebration. January 11th, 2009 marks the seventh year of gross human rights violations perpetrated by the U.S. government and military against foreign detainees being held illegally on U.S. soil. The United States detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have become emblematic of the gross human rights abuses perpetrated by the U.S. government in the name of fighting terrorism. At Guantanamo, the U.S. government sought to hold detainees in a place where neither U.S. nor international law applied, but no one can be held outside of the law. Detainees held at Guantanamo, Bagram, and elsewhere must either be charged with crimes and given fair trials or be released. Witness Against Torture announces a new chapter in the campaign to close the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay, end torture and indefinite detention, and stop extraordinary rendition by the U.S. government. The 100 Days campaign brings together a coalition of groups and individuals who will take part in demonstrations, educate Congress and the public, and engage in nonviolent direct action. Join us in defending basic human rights. Hundreds of detainees are still being illegally held, many of whom have been cleared of all charges. Sign our online petition urging President-elect Barack Obama to take immediate action to close Guantanamo and end illegal U.S. detentions at www.cindysheehanssoapbox.com. Today we are standing up for their rights. Tomorrow it might be yours. For more information about the ongoing campaign to shut Guantanamo, visit 100dayscampaign.org and find out how you can make a difference.
My name is Josefina Antonia Maria Dominguez Perez, and this is my soapbox. For the master's tools will never dismantle the master's house. They may allow us to temporarily beat him at his own game, but they will never enable us to bring about genuine change. The change that I would like to see is a movement created where all government powers take the collective money for war and violence and put that money back into funds for the wellness of all beings. I can't imagine a better world where our governments truly prioritize our tax dollars and energy to spend money on our own well-being. I live in a phenomenal time where I'm able to see the first Black president. I remember watching the presidential nominees on television, and a question was asked, "Do you think Martin Luther King would endorse any of you and why?" And I remember Barack Obama saying that he wouldn't endorse any of us. He would be putting pressure on us. And I just want to remind everyone that hope and change is in our hands. I believe in the unlimited peace and love, which as a child of the universe is my birthright.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox on Green 960. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan. And as promised, here in the studio, we are honored to have my friend Matt Gonzalez. Matt is a former San Francisco Board of Supervisors president. He was a candidate for mayor against Gavin Newsom in 2003, where he ran a very exciting grassroots campaign that we even heard about in Vacaville, California. And recently, He ran as Ralph Nader's vice president in the 2008 race on the independent ticket. Matt, welcome to the show. Thanks for coming into the studio.
I'm very happy to be here.
Well, it's really great that we have you here. You obviously were not overly thrilled with the prospect of an Obama regime because you ran against him with Ralph. And now that he's our new president, where do you think the disconnects will be between his progressive anti-war base and his actions?
Well, I think, you know, Cindy, when I was, Ralph and I were running against him, I think, you know, it was really a number of biographies started to get written about him. And I think it was David Mandel's biography that really made the point that Obama is somebody that people project onto.
Right.
And he has really cultivated the ability to get people of widely divergent politics and ideas to believe that he's their guy. And I think for the anti-war movement and progressives, I think that it's going to take some time, but some of the cracks are already appearing.
Right.
And I think the more sophisticated folks out there are realizing, wait a second, even things like, you know, don't ask, don't tell, or closing Guantanamo, or stopping waterboarding, these are things that, you know, in another era, a moderate Republican would have agreed with us on.
Right, exactly.
So I think there's going to be a lot of reassessment of him in this coming year.
And, you know, one would think that San Francisco would be a good place to challenge the establishment. And you did it very well in 2003. I tried to do it with a little less success in 2008, running against Nancy Pelosi. But your criticisms of Obama have garnered you a lot of hostility here. I read some of the responses to blogs that you wrote or articles that you wrote, which your articles that you wrote were, like, very scholarly, you know, based on fact and had very little invective or if they, I don't think they had any. You would say this was the problem. This is what Obama says. This is how Obama voted. You know, there was no hyperbole or rhetoric like that. Just very fact-based. But you did get a lot of hostility here where even Green Party members, you know, leading Green Party members like Ross Mercurimi, who's on the Board of Supervisors, Jane Kim and Mark Sanchez, endorsed Obama over Cynthia McKinney or even you and Ralph. How can we, as true progressives, keep the torch lit for these people to come back when, you know, they are inevitably disappointed with Obama?
Well, I thought it was really important that if I was going to take a position like the one I took, that I was willing to write and justify where I stood. And that early piece published in late February was called The Obama Craze, Count Me Out.
Right, I got it. I have it right here.
The later piece was called What Do They Have to Do to Lose Your Vote?
Right.
Which was published in Counterpunch.
Right.
And as you point out, I just tried to say, look, let's look at the rhetoric and not be drawn into rhetoric, which I think can be very dangerous. I think for a lot of progressives, they haven't given this sufficient amount of thought, and I don't mean to be condescending. I mean, I think that there you can really have different strategies. One is to try to build an alternative politics, and the other one is some kind of incrementalism. The problem for me, though, is that when you come to the realization that it's the liberal Democrats who are as guilty as anybody else of depriving us of the kind of election reform that would open up American politics so that you could have third parties emerge or independent voices emerge, where you could have a majority winner, and so you don't have to be scared of what happened in Florida in 2000,
right.
then we wouldn't have this problem. People would celebrate the entry of Cynthia McKinney or Ralph Nader into the contest,
right.
But they don't because of this way that we do elections. And so when you realize that the change isn't happening because it's very purposeful, then your tolerance to vote for that incrementalism sort of evaporates. You just aren't interested in it because you see that it's sort of a trap. For the local Green Party members who felt compelled to support Obama, I think it was, and I don't mean to disparage them, but I think it was really about self-preservation politics.
Right. They were
they were scared to face constituents and have to admit that they are trying to build an alternative politics.
Well, and also this show is in San Francisco, and I realized that Obama had a lot of support in San Francisco. A lot of the people who supported Obama supported me, too. I mean, Ross Mercurimi endorsed me. Mark Sanchez endorsed me for my run against Nancy Pelosi, which I think also shows a disconnect. Also, Nancy Pelosi, Obama's policies are closer to Nancy Pelosi's, certainly, than they are mine. My policies would be, of course, aligned with yours and Ralph's or Cynthia McKinney's. So how do we, overcome that without offending anybody? There's good progressives here in San Francisco that, of course, we don't want to offend. But how do we educate them in what you said, that incrementalism isn't necessarily the most humane thing to do in these days?
Well, I think, particularly given the state of torture and the war and things like that, I really do think that Nancy Pelosi's ascendancy to the speakership when she failed to deliver on so many things, to me, that's kind of like the straw that breaks the camel's back. I mean, you look at it and you say, okay, forget about it. Why would I now go and want to support another candidate that talks good but votes badly? And, I had a lot of conversations with people about it, and I respect that people can disagree. I can respect that people want to believe in things like that. But I think when the evidence starts to really demonstrate who somebody is, I don't think you should be upset at the people that are trying to defend the very issues that we all believe in. And I sense that was a little bit more heated than it should have been.
Right.
I sense that the opposition of Ralph Nader and Cynthia McKinney and yourself and others, I don't know. It just felt, inappropriate given what we stand for and what we're trying to do.
Well, especially here in San Francisco, where we were known all over the world for being, very progressive, very liberal. And if there's a place we can do it, hopefully that we can do it here if we just keep on plugging away. But you talked about in one of your articles, people would come up to you on the street and they would oppose your candidacy, oppose Ralph Nader's candidacy, and you would say, well, what about Obama's FISA vote? And they wouldn't even know what you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. I talked to somebody the other night, and I told him that Obama had voted for the Patriot Act reauthorization.
Right.
And he looked at me and said, I didn't know that.
Right.
When I ran for mayor, I know what it is to have a sort of grassroots uprising support you. And so I've been sort of on both sides of the political wave, so to speak. But in that political contest, I like to think that my supporters were a little bit more informed about how I had voted at the Board of Supervisors. And
well, you had had a very progressive and respected record before you ran for mayor. This is Cindy Sheehan, Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox. We have to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Matt Gonzalez.
The Cindy Sheehan Soapbox has a simple philosophy. We don't want our show owned, sponsored, or beholden to any corporate bastards. Don't get us wrong. Not all large companies and businesses are evil imperialists, but let's get real. Conscious companies are hard to come by. Sobered by the challenges facing independent media and inspired by the massive support for our No Corporate Bastards policy, we are launching our 1,000 Soapbox Sponsors campaign to sign up 1,000 monthly supporters by the end of January. We are asking you, the listeners, activists and grassroots organizers that make up our base, to donate $5, $10, or $20 a month to keep Cindy Sheehan's Soapbox not only on the air, but also innovative and powerful. Donating $5 a month, the price of a trip to a coffee shop in most cities, will provide not only the peace of mind that Cindy's Soapbox will stick around for years to come, but will also make you a subscriber for as long as your monthly donation continues. Furthermore, we will print the list of monthly sustainers on our website, unless you don't want to be identified, as a thank you to all of our supporters. Go to www.cindysheehansoapbox.com to sign up now with our automatic monthly donation option. We are committed to producing a high-quality radio show and website that works as a tool to keep you informed and promote social and economic justice. Become a monthly Soapbox sponsor and help make it happen. We are neither owned nor funded by big conglomerates or advertisers. That's why we need your support to sustain our efforts. Please donate now at cindysheehansoapbox.com and consider becoming a monthly sponsor to help us secure our financing into the future. Power to the people.
Hi, this is Scott Cuddy, owner of Digital Media Production. You know, after 30 years or so in the media business, I've learned to keep up on the latest programming as well as the latest equipment and trends in the business. And nowadays, business and show hosts alike are choosing the internet and podcasting as an effective means of getting their message out to a mass audience. Here at Digital Media Production Company, I'm prepared to help your company or you and your personal enterprise jump through all those technical as well as marketing hoops in order to realize your goals. Whether you want to produce an audio or video podcast spotlighting your business, big or small, or become the host of your own radio show, I can help you get there without breaking your budget. So give me a call today at 805-403-4265. I'll share some of my successes with you and let you know how you can be successful. Or email me at dmpc63@msn.com. Located in San Francisco and available worldwide on ISDN. That's Digital Media Production Company, 805-403-4265. Or send me an email today at dmpc63@msn.com.
Welcome back to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. I'm your host, Cindy Sheehan, on Green 960, and we're speaking with Matt Gonzalez. Matt Gonzalez just finished running for vice president. That's quite an incredible achievement, Matt. You know, we talked with Larry Pinkney from the Black Commentator. Do you know Larry?
I don't know him personally. But
yeah,
I know
you know his work and what sure. He does. And, you know, of course, he's a person of color, and you're a person of color. And you say in your piece that, of course, to finally have a person of color in the White House is quite an achievement. But how do you think that Obama will stand up for disadvantaged communities?
Well, I'm not very optimistic. I mean, I think given the votes on the bailout and some of the other positions he's taken, I don't really see this sort of working class, immigrant rights oriented administration. But, you know, I'm starting to wonder, like, well, what do we do then? Okay,
right.
He's the president. Let's
right.
work on it.
Right.
Obviously, we can run candidates against him 4 years from now.
Right.
But right now, I think that the there is a core of independent and left voters who want to create some kind of alternative. And I think that the obligation is now on the progressives and the liberals that supported him and voted for him to come to terms with who he is. And I think in the next 6 months, I would like to see some of those people start to shift over and start to openly say, I regret that vote.
Right.
And I think that's the first step in getting people to start saying, okay, if Obama, if this guy that we put so much into doesn't deliver, then we have to find another way to do this.
Well, like you said before, you just told somebody you spoke to the other day about his vote on reauthorizing the USA Patriot Act. I was at a rally in opposition to the passage of Prop 8 here in California, which banned gay marriage, constitutionally supposed to ban gay marriage. And I said the same thing to him. I said, what do you think of his vote of the USA Patriot Act? He goes, he didn't vote for it to reauthorize it. I said, yes, he most certainly did. And instead of staying there engaging me, he just turned and walked away. And I think that challenging the two-party corporate system is so important that I would like to see, like you said, the people who supported Obama to say they regret that vote or say that they, you know, will work to hold him accountable or whatever. But I think it's also incumbent upon people like me, people like you, people like Ralph Nader and Cynthia McKinney, to take the energy from our campaigns. Even though I only got 17% of the vote, I got more votes against Nancy Pelosi than has ever been recorded since she ran the first time against Harry Britt. Your campaign energized a lot of people. Cynthia's campaign energized the same amount of people. But to work together to try to overhaul the system instead of like being separate entities working for the same thing, you know, using the support that we got and the base, we had almost over $600,000 donations from across the country. Probably some of the same people that donated to your campaign also donated to our campaign. So how can we work together as outside the two-party system to run a viable candidate in 2012, it'll be now?
Well, I think we need to work on some of those systematic issues. It's hard when the presidential race is happening to try to get everybody to agree to participate in debates and things like that.
Right.
But I think, there are groups out there that are trying to get to work on that now. And I think that's the, at least to my thinking, the cornerstone of change. I think the other one is really about mandating majority elections so that you can't spoil a contest. Where the winner should have to have 50%.
Talk about plus. That spoiler thing, though. I've heard you answer that question, very eloquently about Ralph Nader spoiling the election for Gore in 2000.
Well, I always try to point out that, it's a recurring problem in American presidential elections that a third of the contests of the last 100 years I think that's 8 of the 24, the winner didn't have over 50% of the vote.
Right.
And that's really the problem. We can have this national popular vote drive where you want the winner to be the one that has the most votes, obviously. But it's not good enough if you can't accommodate more than two candidates. And that's the problem. It's sort of what happened in Florida in 2000, the idea that a third or fourth candidate like Buchanan or Nader might take some votes away, and we don't really know who had over 50% support in Florida.
Right.
We need to change that, and I think if the political parties that are in office now don't want to work on it, then they should not be allowed to make the argument 4 years from now that somebody's going to spoil the contest. I mean, they now know what the routine is. They've had plenty of time to complain about not being in control of Congress and this and that. And so, it's really on them now. They have to implement this change.
Well, that's another interesting point you just brought up. The Senate, House, and executive branch are all now run by Democrats, right? They're democratically controlled. So I believe the last 8 years, if there's anything positive that is coming from the Bush administration, is that many people who consider themselves Republicans or who consider themselves conservatives have become so disenchanted with the Republican Party. The neoconservative, they've been disenchanted with the neoconservative philosophy and have fled the party to independent. When George Bush left office last Tuesday, he left as the least popular president in recorded history, which is our whole history is recorded. And he only had 22% approval rating. Well, that that's not all Democrats that are disapproving of him. So I'm hoping that what may rise out of this, Democratic control is the same thing that you were talking about, is progressives and leaders in the Democratic Party may finally, have this inevitable disappointment that leads to true systemic change that we need.
One of the things I wrote about in that second piece I wrote about Obama, the what do they have to do to lose your vote, was about Harry Reid's filibuster rule in the Senate.
Uh-huh.
And so many people were unaware of it that he was both complaining that the Republicans had filibustered more times in the democratically controlled Senate than in any other time in history. The last 2 years was the most filibusters of any two-year period. But then it came to light that he wasn't requiring them to physically filibuster on the floor of the Senate. He would just let the leader call him up and say, oh, we have enough votes to filibuster that.
Wow.
And he would just allow it. And then the most insulting thing of all, when some of the Democrats, Russ Feingold and others, wanted to filibuster the FISA bill, he said that they would have to physically present to filibuster. He wouldn't accept the
Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi are definitely very weak leaders. Matt, I'm planning on having a reunion show with you and Larry after the 100 days. Will you come back and talk to us?
Absolutely.
And will you tell us what you're doing right now?
I'm practicing law. I've got a progressive law firm here in the city, Gonzalez and Lay, and we handle cases in Los Angeles, Sacramento, San Francisco, San Jose.
Anything
a lot of civil rights work.
Yeah. Anything exciting coming up on the political front with you?
Well, I don't know. You know, it's always a changing landscape. I didn't expect to be back in politics,
right.
But Ralph kind of pulled me back.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being with us, Matt. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon, and good luck, and, you know, Happy New Year, and thanks for telling the truth and keeping the pressure on.
Thank you.
Hope to talk to you soon. This is Cindy Sheehan. You're listening to Cindy Sheehan Soapbox. We were just chatting with Matt Gonzalez. When we come back, I'll be doing my soapbox rant. Are you effing kidding me?
Some anniversaries aren't cause for celebration. January 11th, 2009 marks the 7th year of gross human rights violations perpetrated by the U.S. government and military against foreign detainees being held illegally on U.S. soil. The United States detention facilities at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, have become emblematic of the gross human rights abuses perpetrated by the U.S. government in the name of fighting terrorism. At Guantanamo, the U.S. government sought to hold detainees in a place where neither U.S. nor international law applied, but no one can be held outside of the law. Detainees held at Guantanamo, Bagram, and elsewhere must either be charged with crimes and given fair trials or be released. Witness Against Torture announces a new chapter in the campaign to close the U.S. prison camp at Guantanamo Bay, end torture and indefinite detention, and stop extraordinary rendition by the U.S. government. The 100 Days campaign brings together a coalition of groups and individuals who will take part in demonstrations, educate Congress and the public, and engage in nonviolent direct action. Join us in defending basic human rights. Hundreds of detainees are still being illegally held, many of whom have been cleared of all charges. Sign our online petition urging President-elect Barack Obama to take immediate action to close Guantanamo and end illegal U.S. detentions at www.cindysheehanssoapbox.com. Today we are standing up for their rights. Tomorrow it might be yours. For more information about the ongoing campaign to shut Guantanamo, visit 100dayscampaign.org and find out how you can make a difference.
Welcome back to the show. On this week's chapter of Are You Effing Kidding Me?, I'm going to be talking about the touchy-feely emotion of hope. Dictionary.com has 10 definitions for the word hope, but the one I picked that seemed to be the best definition for my purposes today defines hope as a person or thing in which expectations are centered, as in the medicine was her last hope, or as in Barack Obama is our nation's last hope. How many times do we say that word during the day? I hope this headache goes away. I hope there's a parking spot near the restaurant. I hope there's not too much traffic on the way to work. I hope, he hopes, she hopes, they hope, and we all hope, blah, blah, blah. Hoping is like wishing. It's a word that has the empty feeling of have a nice day, or even better, I hope you have a nice day. Like I said at the beginning of today's soapbox, one can't feed her children on hope or pay the rent or mortgage. Hope doesn't create one job or bring peace to a world that is imploding by violence and environmental crises. On the campaign trail, the new First Lady of the Empire was fond of saying, "Everything begins and ends with hope." Are you effing kidding me, Mrs. Obama? Nothing begins nor certainly ends with hope. Things begin when needs need to be met and ends with a lot of hard work. We just celebrated MLK Jr. Day, and he had this to say about hope. Change does not roll in on the wheels of inevitability, but comes through continuous struggle. Just because the face of the empire is now a person of color and he is fluent in the doublespeak of corporate imperialism does not mean that we, the people, can rest on shaky laurels of hope and give up the ongoing struggles towards peace and justice. The organizers of the recent Oscar Grant protests in Oakland that resulted in the establishment arresting the officer that cowardly murdered Oscar in cold blood did not sit back and say, gee, I hope that the family and community receives justice for this crime. No, they stood up to those in power and demanded justice. Movements throughout our collective history, from the 1776 rebellion to the civil rights movement, did not sit around hoping for justice. They also demanded their rights. Our brothers and sisters in the LGBTQ community are not hoping for equal rights. They are actively demanding them. Like I also said in the beginning of this show and my activism will continue to be the gadfly that is needed in this hazy, hard-to-grasp season of hope. Okay, then, as you can imagine, since my son was killed and I started my peace work, I have received thousands upon thousands of emails. The emails I receive range from sincere expressions of love and gratitude to death threats that have had to be reported to the authorities. Some emails have been respectful dialogues, and some have been outright attacks with words these professed Christians should not even know. Many of the emails I have received are designed to upset me because they attack my deceased son, Casey, or my motherhood. I received one such email from a person named John Graham this past week. I don't know where John is from, but his Ask Cindy question was, Cindy, how many innocent Iraqis did your son kill, and how many did he torture before he killed? First of all, this question tells me that John Graham is an emotional torturer that was trying to upset me, but it also shows to me a person that doesn't do his research before he tries to upset a broken-hearted mother. As I answer John, Casey was only in Iraq for 5 days before he was killed in the first battle he was ordered to fight in. Casey was a mechanic who told everyone that he couldn't kill before he was deployed to Iraq, and he refused to go on the mission that killed him. But his sergeant forced him onto the back of the truck, and he was dead minutes later. Also, John, most of our soldiers do not join the military to kill and torture. They join, as Casey did, to get educational benefits in a country that has decreed that only wealthy people can send their children to college. Or they join to get jobs in an economy that loses over 500,000 jobs per week. Or they join to get their teeth fixed or health benefits in a country that allows 50 million of us to be without health insurance. John, I am not personally upset at your question, but I'm pretty astounded at your callousness and ignorance. So please don't forget to submit your Ask Cindy questions to me at cindy@cindysheehansoapbox.com. Your Soapbox Action of the Week is to go to our website at cindysheehansoapbox.com to learn more about how you can boycott companies that are supporting the Israeli massacre of Gaza. Well, we're out of time, and I would again like to thank my guests Larry Pinkney and Matt Gonzalez, and my producers Dee Dee Miller and Tiffany Burns, and our techno whiz Scott Cuddy. But I would especially like to thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week on Our Soapbox. This is Cindy Sheehan, always speaking truth to power. Peace out.